Hello, Council President.
How are you? Who's going to chime in on this when you get a chance?
Feel free.
So, historically, and it's there's a weighting, if you will, the good against the bad. Seems like a lot of work for people to get up to a $300 claim on a pothole, which always bothered me. But then again, what had happened many years ago, Councilwoman Travis will probably remember, it was probably a good 10 or 15 years ago, we had one individual that came in and gave one bid. It was really high for one tire. And then there was some evidence out there, although we couldn't prove it, that there was some sort of kickback going on between the body shop or the repair shop and the individual that came in with the high estimate. So it really seems burdensome to residents and constituents to go get three estimates. And the other point that I was going to bring up is, I agree with you, Councilman Sinapi, about the condition of Harding Road. It's awful. It gets washed out. It looks like they've done some cuts over there, so they're going to do some paving, which is great. I know a lot of people are excited about that. It's long overdue. And what I would say is, and what I would analogize to for Councilman Gephardt, is the same is true with Major Potter Road. And we had this at the last council meeting for the person who fortuitously had there was a company that was doing work on Route 2 putting in gas mains. And the assumption was made, knowing the condition of that road for 20 years, that one of those potholes was somehow related to the construction work, which that road has been awful for 20 years. And actually a portion of it just got repaved this year. So I support giving the people what they deserve. And I would support you in this case, Councilman Sinapi. But I do think that as you did in this case, we should apply the same standards of firsthand knowledge about the condition of roadways, and especially the condition of that one in Major Potter Road, that we don't make people chase other third parties on $300 claims that, as you know, the burden of proof would be on the resident to show that the construction company caused that pothole in the roadway, which would be a slim to none chance. And I just raise that because every year there's going into the new council session, there's a kumbaya attitude among everybody. And I've been listening tonight and it sounds good. It sounds great. And that's always a good thing. Just take that into consideration when you guys are looking at other issues on these $300 claims. And unfortunately, I really think that it's burdensome to the residents, but at the same time, it's necessary to prevent what had happened in the future. And that's it. Thank you.
That makes sense. We might want to consider some sort of change down the road when it comes to the estimates and labor, because that's almost always the thing that bogs everything up, the labor costs not being in the estimates. The other estimates, obviously, we need them in at least one, hopefully the invoice. The burden is definitely not a low one. It was even worse when they were forced to attend in person. They sit for hours, potentially not even get heard. I'm glad we changed that at least, but it would not hurt to potentially look into other changes. Councilman Lattiser?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I don't need to tell everyone that, you know, potholes have been a major issue with me over the last couple of years. You're all well aware of that. And I agree with Councilman Snap. Actually, I agree with all of you. And when you look back at the amount of issues we've had as a result of these potholes, and in some cases, potholes just being ignored and not being filled for a very long time, And then we're putting the citizens through this onerous process of getting three estimates and forcing them to go with the lowest estimate in many cases as a result of potholes being ignored. That is just terrible. And today, I don't think anyone would argue the fact that it's not a lot of money for a tire and a rim for $300. And when you hit some of these potholes, it's not unreasonable to say that your front end has been knocked out of line and perhaps even further damage. So, yeah, I agree with everyone's comments. I think that this is definitely something that needs to be revisited. What the amount of the award is capped at perhaps need to be revisited. And I, for one, am looking forward to a lot more attention being given to the pothole conditions that we have throughout this city going forward. I'm quite confident that we'll see some improvement in that. But in the meantime, you hit some of these potholes, $300 is not a lot of money anymore today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments from members of the committee or the council? Seeing none, we can entertain a motion.
Move to hold to January 20.
Seconded.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Now that concludes the consent.
PCR on that one. Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
PCR 120.
Mr. Chairman, there's one more item.
On the consent calendar?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Miriam, again.
I have three items on mine for...
On your consent calendar? The other one is on the public safety agenda.
Okay.
You have the claim?
I do. Hmm? Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now is PCR 121?
Nope, 120, 20.
2020.
PCR 120, 20.
Got it.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to the regular docket for the public safety. We have resolution relative to claims. I pronounced it correctly earlier today. I'm going to mess it up. Mark Houlet, I think it is. And I know he's on the line. Can we make it so that he's able to speak, please?
You can unmute now.
Hello.
Howdy.
Hi.
Thank you for waiting.
I was curious to know if I would have a chance to give you guys some additional information regarding my claim.
Not only would you have a chance, that's actually exactly what we're looking for. Because then just so we'll update you first, that way you know what's going on. The department had already recommended denying your claim on the basis that they said the damage occurred during a windstorm event. And further at it, it's not negligence on our part, rather that it's an act of God. And then there were other issues as well. Specifically, your affidavit has a problem, but I suppose there's no reason to go into that until we figure out the first part. So obviously the department says it's not their fault, or rather the city's fault. Your description says 50 mile an hour wind knocked a limb off a city tree, and then it fell and damaged your property. So what can you tell us?
Again, when I wrote my claim, it was in a pre-COVID context, and I'm not saying it was anybody's fault. I'm just, I was under the assumption I was going to have a chance at a hearing that I would present it in person. So here I am. I'm just going to sum it up for you. It's so the additional information I wanted to share with you guys is I had taken actions about the tree because it was a progressive leaning. It's pretty much an old tree. the CD tree in question. And me and my neighbor across the street were both concerned about an eventual accident that was waiting to happen. We both took actions as far as placing calls to the city, and that we were afraid that eventually it was gonna, there were limbs that were gonna fall. And unfortunately, there were no actions that were substantiated from our phone calls to the city about what we thought was an accident that was waiting to happen. So after the incident, it got taken down, I believe, in March. Like, the accident happened on January 12th, 2020. And I believe it was somewhere in March or April that Highway Division came in and finally took the rest of the tree down, because there were several limbs to that tree that were pretty much progressively leaning and leaning. So finally, the city just decided to finally take it down. After it, but unfortunately, we felt that it took an incident to happen to take the whole tree down.
So I'm looking at the tree in question actually on Google Maps, and it's an old picture. It's back from 2011. And even then, it's not looking great. That tree is heavily leaning. And I'm guessing it got worse, as you mentioned.
Yeah. My neighbor I'm on 101 Louisiana. My neighbor is on 96 Louisiana, and he had serious concern about his roof. He had placed calls to the city about this. And my calls were about the fear that some limbs that progressively were leaning would eventually fall on my property and damage part of my property, like it did on January 12th.
Yeah, so it's not simply a random tree on city property fell. It's more, you gave notice that there was an issue, not only you, but your neighbor on more than one occasion. Nothing was done, and eventually what you expected might happen happened, right?
Correct.
And how much in total did it cost to replace or fix everything?
It's $700 for the fence, for a section of my vinyl fence. There's also two shrubs. At the time, the estimate, and again, I'm going by the lowest estimate. The two shrubs that got damaged, the estimate for those shrubs were $725. So I would consider, so the two, on my claim, I added up those two items, the shrubs and the fence, which totaled $1,425. But if I had to say, if you cannot approve both repair, if I had the choice, in other words, between the two, I would save the fence. It's mostly because I have a dog who that I'm trying to keep in my yard, and make sure he doesn't escape. I've been putting temporary panels, but sometimes with the wind, and it's not always easy to keep the panel in place, especially for my dog, and for, I don't want to get into trouble with the city about my dog being at large. I have unfortunately had my dog escaping twice. I would say if I had to, if you had to prioritize the two repairs, I would say the fence to me would be the most important.
All right. And I suppose before we do the affidavit part, does any other members of the committee have any questions?
I did, Mr. Chairman. I believe when we talked about this, one of the concerns that was brought up was putting in the claim and the question of whether we can go above the amount of $300, number one. Number two, why wasn't the claim submitted through the trust?
So it's just under the amount, if I'm not mistaken, when we brought that up. I think it's at least $1,500, if not $2,000, for the cutoff. Okay. And the $300 cap is for potholes.
Okay. And all right. And the trust, being that it's being deemed, or I understand, I'm not questioning I want to make sure that we're clarified. So all this right here, what we're speaking about, would it be beneficial and more, would it be more viable for the claimant to go through the trust or to continue on this path?
I'm seeing that head shaking from Attorney Walsh.
My understanding, and I know Lynn Progner, I think, updated us at the last meeting, is that threshold for referrals to the trust is $2,500. And so the question that comes back to you as members of the council is really to decide whether the city breached a duty that was the actual approximate cause of the damages here. So it's a city's negligence claim that he's asserting. And as the chairman noted, the 300 cap is only applicable per state law for potholes.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Ricks, and then we'll go to Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. So one thing that I was confused about is that the $700 for the estimate from United Fence, it referred to one section, and then looking at the estimate from Lowe's, I'm seeing that it references 56 feet of fencing. So I wasn't sure the exact area that we were talking about, if it was one, say, 6 foot or 8 foot section, or if we were talking about a 56 foot section.
It's only the one section. It's only for one section that got damaged. I'm not sure. I realize and I understand that the Lowe's estimate was, I'm trying to find the right, it's kind of like a mess in other words, for lack of a better term. I feel like they did not understand what I was looking for. I was looking for only one section, and I'm thinking there was some kind of disconnect between what I was looking for, and they still sent me that estimate. And the lady at the finance department told me that that's fine, I'll take it because I need more than one estimate. And I was like, that's fine. I said, if the council could understand or could extrapolate to one section, it's just that it was explained to me by the Lowe's staff that they could only make an estimate for the whole, if they were redoing the whole, and if they have to come for only one section, then they would extrapolate.
Yeah, they're looking for more business, I'm sure.
But that's probably it, yeah. But the person in finance, I believe it's Margie, her name, she had told me that's fine, just give it to me and we'll put it with your claim.
Councilman Lazar.
Yes, thank you. I'm pretty sympathetic to this gentleman's claim in his position, and I can say for certain that I understand about these tree issues because I've experienced them firsthand. I also have a particular constituent, who both that constituent and myself and several others for over a year had been requesting that these damaged or these dead trees be taken down. I started also to put notice to the city about the potential for property damage and personal injury because of these trees, and limbs did come down, and the city did ignore taking down one of these monster trees for a year. And eventually more of the tree came down and more damage was caused. So I'm pretty sympathetic to Mr. Houle and his claim and his frustration about asking and requesting for tree maintenance to be done. And I understand that there's only so much tree service one tree warden can provide, but when this type of time goes by, I think, and damage occurs, then you know what, you got to pay the bill. I think my personal opinion is, feeling his pain, that I would support him being compensated for the damage of his fence of $700 and also the cost of replacing his shrubberies in the amount of $725. This certainly isn't his fault. I don't buy the act of God after the powers to be had been notified many times about the danger being posed by this tree. So I, for one, would support compensating him for those two items in the amount of $1,425. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah, I feel similarly, although we might have an issue with the estimates for the trees. Councilman Ricks?
Thank you. This is one of those situations where when it often comes up in Ward 2, I ask my constituents to document it if at all possible. Oftentimes I'll go out there, snap a few photos and submit a request by email as well, because when the phone calls are made, it becomes harder to track some of these issues. If this sort of situation unfortunately happens before the tree warden gets out there and just solves the problem. But I would agree with my colleagues, including Councilman Lattiser and Councilman Howe, on this, that it certainly seems credible that these phone calls were made. As Chairman Snappy pointed out, looking at the Google Street View, the tree was leaning back in 2011. Speaking with Mr. Houle, I'm sorry that I'm butchering your name.
Houle is fine.
Houle, thank you.
Houle,
thank you. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Houle, you seem credible to me, and this is certainly not the first time that people have called up the city and tried to get issues relating to trees taken care of before there's damage done. So while it would be preferable to have some images that were sent in to the city by email or the like, I don't think that that's something that we've ever actually required in circumstances like this. And I don't see it as appropriate to start requiring it here and now. So I would be comfortable with approving for the $700 for the estimate from United Fence. And my suggestion on this to the committee, and the city council solicitor can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that a way that we can proceed with this so that Mr. Houle gets that needed funding quickly after this long delay with the hearing of this claim, and also preserve his right as to being able to present three estimates for the replacement of those two shrubs, would be, I'm going to suggest that we approve the claim and at the same time assign a PCR number so that it's not necessary for that remaining portion of the claim to be resubmitted all over again, but instead it could be amended a little later if Mr. Houle would like to come up with a couple of other estimates for the replacement shrubs.
That would be ideal, but is that possible, Attorney Walsh?
I think we can address each potential item here either as a whole. I would caution against, but I think there's a related item that we probably need to clean up prior to getting to answering that question.
Very true. The affidavit.
And so I would reserve that until after we figure out the answers to the other questions.
That's a good point. We'll do Councilman Howe first.
Thank you. Just very quickly, it says right here on the affidavit that we will be speaking about, page 2, it says the request reimbursement of the amount of $1,425. Am I correct in identifying that that's the amount that the claimant is requesting still?
That's what he testified to before, yeah.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Thank you.
So, Mr. Houle, on the actual affidavit, you checked off the box that says you're intending to or will be seeking compensation from other sources. Did you in fact do that?
Oh, it's that was a confusing part in the application. the way it was explained to me in finance, in the finance department, is that the box that I checked was, I have the application right in front of me, and I'm trying to get back to what I remember she explained to me. It was something like, if the claim gets denied, then I would seek from homeowner insurance or something like that. But then I would have the intent to seek. But it's like the way she explained it to me, it's like that I would not do any form of compensation search until I hear from the city first, basically. So I did not, in other words, I did not seek any other form of compensation.
And should this council provide the $1,425, you would not be seeking any additional compensation after that, correct?
Correct.
And Attorney Walsh, is there anything else we want to make sure to get on the record?
I would just, I mean, in the age of these Zooms and things, normally we would have the claimant more formally attest to these things. So I would just ask to if the council could indulge for me to be able to walk through and have this claimant verbally attest to a few of these items on the affidavit in order to restate it.
Absolutely.
And would the clerk swear him in?
Poulet, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Poulet, if you could state your name and spell it for the record, please.
Sure. Mark, M-A-R-C, Poulet, H-O-U-L-E.
And having been duly sworn and deposed, you restate the items that are in your affidavit with the exception of changing the checking of the box from the third item to the first item, which would indicate that you have not sought compensation, nor will you at any time seek compensation from any source, including but not limited to any insurance company, other than the City of Warwick for any loss arriving from the above described incident, and the rest isn't pertinent as it pertains to potholes. But do you so agree and indicate that is your intention to make such change to your affidavit?
Just so I'm clear, it's in the eventuality that I would receive compensation from the city, right?
This would state that should you receive compensation from the city, you will not seek any other compensation.
That's correct. Okay. Yes, I would want to change it for this box. Correct.
Okay. So as Mr. Chairman, as it pertains to the affidavit and the updating of, you know, said paperwork, I think we could proceed on the matter. I would just note that the determination of the amounts and the timeliness, how urgent of a matter could it be as it relates to potentially resolving this all in one item? Could we have estimates before the next meeting, perhaps, and be able to do in one shot so as not to divide the item?
Would dividing the item be such a lift that it's not worth it? I don't know what it entails, truthfully. I haven't seen it done.
I would defer to the administration for process aspects of this. From a legal standpoint, I'm not aware of something that would limit us from taking this as an A and a B type of approach. I'm just thinking I would defer logistically to the administration for process purposes.
I mean, in my head, what makes sense is that we could approve the $700 for the fence and he basically reapply for the $725. So at least the time sensitive one gets done. But I would prefer not have to do that if possible. It seems like a tedious, needless step. Councilman Lattiser? You're muted.
This is, thank you. This is a claim, as everyone can tell, has been going on since January 1st. It's been almost a year. Realize it's not any doings of this council and that there were various delays that incurred in this. But nonetheless, it's over a year. We've heard testimony, not just from the claimant, but from our colleagues as well as myself, that these tree issues, they have been an issue. They've been a significant issue. And notice after notice after notice has been given. And for whatever reason, these responsibilities of at least removing these dangerous sections of these trees has not been fulfilled. It just seems unreasonable to me to continue to put, in this case, Mr. Houlet, through the motions of getting another two bids for something that certainly was not his fault. He had made numerous requests to get this down, and it wasn't. Getting another couple of bids and without calendar, et cetera, this could drag on for another couple of months. It seems unreasonable to me to make any person go through these type of motions. So I just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Attorney Walsh, I'm still unclear as to how we go about splitting it up.
In my years of experience, we've never done so. It doesn't necessarily address the complete possibility of doing such, but I think if we can proceed in a comprehensive whole manner, and perhaps if the council were of interest, the claimant could submit the supplementary items as soon as possible, and that could be included in your record if it were to be held to the next meeting, whereby you may or may not require the claimant to further appear as you conclude the process.
Yeah, Mr. Houlet, I'm going to walk you through a hypothetical and you let me know if it's acceptable. Rather than inventing a process here on the spot, which may or may not cause problems for you and for us down the line, would it cause any issue if instead we had you get two additional estimates for the trees? And that way, because we require three estimates, and while you got them for the fence, you did not get them for the trees. And you wouldn't have to come back, you wouldn't have to call in again. Once you submit the estimates at our next meeting, we would simply presumably approve based on that, unless you like handwrote the estimate on your own or something silly.
I could possibly get two more estimates if that's what, I understand the process. So I would be okay with agreeing with that. And I'm sorry, it's probably a misunderstanding between me and the staff in the finance department. I was under the assumption when I submitted my claim that it was acceptable. So if it wasn't, I'm sorry about the lack of, I'm not sure if that's considered a lack of compliance to the claim.
No reason to apologize. Okay. Yeah, you did more than most people, so it's appreciated.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm trying to make sure we compensate you correctly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would be agreeable to. So you're saying the first estimate for the trees is going to stay on record and I would just have to add up to that two additional claims. Two additional estimates, right?
Yeah. So no additional affidavit or anything crazy like that. Simply two additional estimates for the trees, which you send in to wherever you sent the first stuff, I assume the finance department.
That's good. That sounds good to me. Yep. That's acceptable to me.
Sorry, Mr. Houlet, this is Lynn Prodger. I'm the acting finance director.
Hi, Lynn.
I'd like to personally help you. Can I give you my direct extension so you can call me and I'll expedite everything for you?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
It's 921-9642. All right.
9642. So as soon as I get the two additional estimates, I can just give you a call and to expedite the process.
And I will try and get it out as fast as possible for you, all right?
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Mrs. No problem. Roger. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Given that what we just discussed, we hold it to the first meeting in January, and that one's actually coming up quicker than at least I realized, but that should give them time to get the estimates, and they'll be able to get everything squared away. Does anyone else want to chime in first? Attorney Walsh?
I just wasn't sure if we were going to attempt it to perhaps get it, put it on the December calendar. If it were to get done by then, you would preserve your option to punt it over again should that, you know, if timeliness is of concern, the December 21st meeting.
You're absolutely right. It went right over my head that we have another December meeting. So I'm glad you said that. So yeah, it's the next December meeting. Anyone have any issues with that or any comments or questions? All right, seeing none.
Sorry, it's Lynn again. There's no time to get them on the 21st meeting. Everything would be due to you by the end of this week. It's just not. I just want to set the expectation. I'll do everything I can to get it done, but on the 21st, I'm pretty skeptical.
So just quick thing, as long as the estimates are delivered to anybody really, and that we have them for the meeting, whether they be emailed on that day or not, I don't see a problem because the item would still be noticed properly as far as it's his claim. So the fact that the two estimates are provided to us day of doesn't seem problematic to me. I mean, if one of the attorneys want to correct me if I'm mistaken, feel free, but I think that works.
Okay, sorry.
I would like to add, I could do my best to get the two estimate by then. It would be preferable if I could get it done by the 21st. I just cannot guarantee the availability of different contractors to make an estimate, but I can definitely do my best to make it work.
Yeah, and just to be clear, worst case scenario, you just let the finance department or myself, because you have my contact information from earlier today, you let us know that, hey, I'd like more time and we'll just hold it. That's not a problem. But also with the estimates, you don't have to go crazy. There's sometimes people just go online and they'll look up, like for instance, if you, let's see, these trees were of a certain type and a certain height, you could go online and look at somebody that sells them and price it out and say, look, it's going to cost me this much to get the trees from them. Just my only caution to that at the same time is that be careful because labor often is not included with that. And I don't want you to shortchange yourself. So it might end up being that your best bet is with contractors, but it also might end up being a possibility where you get them online too.
Okay.
It's whatever works for you. People have just printed out like shopping carts, quote unquote, from like Walmart, the online aspect of it. And that was enough. So whatever works.
Okay. Understood.
Again, anyone else have any comments or questions?
So the motion will be to hold until December 21st?
Preferably, yes.
Okay. Motion to hold till December 21st meeting?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Houle, for not only participating, but for sticking around so long to do so.
Just a quick question, if I may again, so are we holding also the fence until the December 21st meeting, the fence part of the claim?
Yes, it's all combined in one. Is that problematic or no?
No, I could live with that.
All right, just wanted to make sure.
Okay.
Thank you again. All right, next we have PCR 95-20, resolution in regards to erecting stop signs on the secondary roadways of Grimshaw Place, Hackman Place, Worth Street, Crystal Drive, and Lockwood Street. Councilman Lattiser, it's not drafted.
Hold till the second meeting in January
20th. So the sponsor to hold to the second meeting in January 20th. Move that.
Move to hold PCR 95-20 to the second meeting in January 20th.
Second that motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next we have PCO 21-20, ordinance in regards to erecting no parking signs on Naples Avenue in front of the Starbucks lot facing westbound. This is first passage. It's me. This has a traffic study accompanying it in response to complaints from constituents regarding the recent development over there. Not necessarily the business owners, but people parking where they probably shouldn't be and narrowing the roadway to the point where it became unsafe. Not just the roadway itself, but people turning out of the new business. So this is hopefully going to go in and temper that. And then based on how this works out, we're going to see if we need to make further changes down the line. But this is the first step, pretty much. Now, any questions or comments from members of the committee? Any questions or comments from members of the council? Questions or comments from members of the public? Does not look like it. None.
To approve for first passage, PCO 21-20.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next, we have PCO 22-20, ordinance in regards to erecting no parking signs for Arnold Ave and Hall Street. This is Council President Marola, and it's his first passage.
Yeah, so that's supported by a traffic study, and so I'd ask for favorable action.
Perfect. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Any questions or comments from members of the council? Any questions or comments from members of the public? Any questions or comments from members of the public?
Move for favorable action on PCO 22-20.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next, we have PCR 105-20, resolution in regards to erecting stop signs on Suburban Parkway. Councilman Travis?
Yes. This is accompanied by a traffic study. The police department did a thorough checkup on it. This is the cross street from Oakland Beach Avenue as they're entering the beach area. And I move favorable action possible.
And I may have missed it. I presume it's backed up by a traffic study?
Yes, that's what I said at the beginning.
All right, figured I missed it. Any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Any questions from members of the public?
Move favorable action on PCR 105-20.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
PCR 106-20, resolution in regards to erecting a four-way stop sign on Kenyon Avenue. This is me again. It's backed up by a traffic study. It's fairly straightforward. It's used as a commonly used as a cut-through street for Main Ave and Post Road / Jefferson Boulevard. So as you can imagine, it gets a fair amount of traffic from time to time. I request favorable action. Any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Any questions from members of the public?
Move favorable action on PCR 106-20.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And PCR 114-20, resolution in regards to erecting / symbol top signs, frequently stop signs on the eastbound and westbound of Petaconcet Avenue where it intersects with Budlong Avenue. Councilman Ricks?
Yes, obviously that should read stop signs. So I'm not sure if any amendment is actually needed on that, but this is supported by a traffic study. I would move favorable action.
Yeah, I saw the head shaking from Attorney Walsh. It's just a Scribner's error, so that's easily fixed. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Any questions or comments from members of the council? Any questions or comments from members of the public? Any questions or comments from members of the public?
Move favorable action on PCR 114-20.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Lynn, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that finally concludes public safety.
That's correct.
Was mine longer than finance? Be honest.
Tonight, I think it was.
Oof. Grave dishonor.
7:41.
So there you go.
Next up is the Intergovernmental Committee, Chairman Corley, Councilman Howe, Councilman McElroy, and we are in order to begin.
Okay, this is the Intergovernmental Committee meeting beginning at 7:41. The first item on the agenda, I believe, is the acceptance of minutes from the November 4th meeting. Can't hear you, Mr. Howe. Well, are you speaking?
I did. I apologize. Move favorable action.
Okay, Jim, can you give us thumbs up or unmute? Okay, there's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 The first thing I believe on the calendar is PCO-9-20, an ordinance in regard. No, never mind.
Mr. Chairman, it's PCR-1. Mr. Chairman, PCR-196-19, a resolution to the General Assembly for additional funding for Warwick Public Schools. Council President Marola. It is not drafted.
Thank you. What would you like to do, Council President?
I'd like to get more money for the schools. I don't know if that's going to work, though. Speaking of which, I believe that, and Kayla can probably fill us in on that, I believe that that's why Attorney Conley couldn't be with us tonight, because the Senate was finally voting on those appropriations, or at least his committee was, to the cities and towns. So I just bring that to everybody's attention, because that's going to be interesting considering the car tax. Why don't we just hold that 1 week, and if not, I might pass that off to Councilman Gephardt to see if you folks couldn't pass something for the upcoming year, in particular because of that Pathways program that we went to on that presentation last year. You know, in essence, we're paying, for example, when kids go to North Kingstown, if it costs North Kingstown $17,000 and it costs us $20 to educate a student, we're giving them $20 and they're getting a windfall of $3,000. So I'd like to see that in there. And I'd also like to see the state aid to education formula re-examined also. It's funny, if you look at that over the years, I think that if it was based on per kid, it was something like $30 or $40 million more that would come to the city. I would take a quarter of that just to help. But in any event, I would request that we hold it 1 week and then go from there. Thank you.
For request of the sponsor, hold PCR-196-19 till the next December 21st meeting.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And item number two, Mr. Chairman, is PCR-115-20.
You just beat me. I got it. Resolution to the Kent County Water Authority and the Public Utilities Commission asking for an investigation in regards to the significant water rate increase. This is from Council President Marola.
Hold on one sec. I don't know if I saw. I know what it's about.
Second.
Okay.
All in
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Yes, Councilman McAllister, can you help us?
Sure, thank you very much. And thank you to the Council President for bringing this forward. In wards 7, 8, and 9, we have Kent County water in our sections. And we've been receiving a number of calls from ratepayers about these large bills that have come, sometimes double and triple the bills. So the Council President took the lead and drafted this to look into this. So there's a number of state senators and state reps that are looking into this as well. I know Councilman Sinapi and I watched the latest Kent County Water Board meeting, and I was a little concerned of their they were very defensive that they were getting calls on this. And I would like to stress that, you know, they received over they said 447 complaints into the office. People that took the time, they saw the water bill, they had major concerns and called the office. One of the things that I didn't really appreciate is our friends on the Water Authority went around the room and they said, well, how many calls did you receive? And someone said one. Another person said, the next one I get will be the first one I get. With all due respect to our friends on the Water Board, no one knows who's on the Water Board Authority. I actually looked it up to see who was on there. And while your names are listed, none of your contact information is. So that is not a good way to gauge what the ratepayers are thinking. A very good way to gauge is the 447 complaints that you received at this last billing. So there's a number of things that they're looking into. They have a new meters that are picking up on some type of a leak. Sometimes there's leaks that the old meters weren't picking up. Not everyone has these meters yet, but their goal is to get everyone with their meters. One of the things they spoke about, which I think is encouraging, is maybe switching over to monthly billing. Because if you do have a leak, and they used an example of if you have a leak in your toilet and you don't know about it, and you don't get billed for 120 days, that's 120 days of that leak going through and you know, the meters running on these things. So at least with a monthly bill, you'll find out within 30 days, hey, why is this spiking all of a sudden? I also would encourage the Water Board Authority to maybe do some proactive work in looking at some of these bills, seeing if there is an issue, like why all of a sudden this individual who's lived in the same place for 20 years, why is their bill skyrocketing this last quarter or this last billing period? Maybe it is because of a leak. So maybe we can be proactive and go out there on that. So I really commend to the Council President for taking the lead on this and putting this forward. I know there's a number of senators that are calling on this as well. Participating and watching the Kent County Water Authority, they did break down these bills. When people called, they broke it down. They explained the reasons, and I understand that. A lot of them, the majority of them, they were justified. But here's the thing. They are on the board. They're there to look out for the ratepayer. So they shouldn't be defensive when they're getting these calls. They should not be putting the burden on the ratepayer, who is upset because we're in the middle of a crisis here and they're getting a huge bill all of a sudden. So I just ask that they work with them, that they sit down, maybe try to be a little more proactive. I do like the idea if they are trying to upgrade their meter readings so they get more accurate readings. But I want to make sure that they're doing it, and being proactive. Again, sometimes they don't receive bills and it's of 120 days pass. And if you have a leak, 120 days, that leak is going, you're having a huge thing. How is a ratepayer supposed to know that there's a leak, you know, within their pipes? They don't know. If they're not seeing the leak, it's going to keep running. So I commend this. I think it's very important discussion to have. I understand that the board members are doing everything they can. I just would like to just point out to them, you know, serve the ratepayers. You are there to work on behalf of the ratepayers. We don't need to be defensive, but when you do get complaints, you need to reach out to these ratepayers. You are there for them. And again, I thank the council president for moving this forward.
Just to follow up on Councilman McAllister said, I think the worst example is in Councilman Sinapi's ward over at Centerville Glen on Centerville Road. They're claiming that development used 37.58 truckloads of water in 90 days. Well, that's 4,843 gallons per day. Divided by 9 units means that they were using 538 gallons per unit, which is really humanly impossible. So either there are defective meters or they're getting backflow or there's a problem with the billing system. I don't know. I'm hoping that the PUC gets involved. I believe they are. And they're suggesting that I think they have an investigator on it, which would be very, very helpful. And I would encourage the Kent County Water Authority to go after, and hopefully there's a performance bond, but to go after the manufacturer of those meters. And it might be also the distributor. The developer of that complex had estimated that the cost for the complex would be $3,000 a year. The bill for the quarter was $4,500. So it was $18,000, or almost six times as much as what was estimated for the year. Last year's usage for the same period of time was 1,716 gallons per day, which equals about 190 gallons per unit, not 538 gallons per unit. So it's a real problem. And I think a lot of times when you look at people that are in part-time positions, I always laugh because they say council members are in part-time positions, but you know how much time we all put in. But they rely on the people at the Water Authority to give them accurate information. And this just does not jive with anything that could be humanly possible for consumption. And that's just one, as Councilman McAllister pointed out, example of a bill. I mean, he mentioned there's 473 complaints. And you can imagine the amount of money that adds up to in the middle of a pandemic where people haven't been able to work and some people are still relying on unemployment to get a bill that much higher. Not to mention Kent County's rates are significantly higher than Warwick's rates, almost double the last time I checked. It really presents a problem, and I don't know how people can afford it. And many people are trying to pay it under protest, but and getting no answers. It's like David against Goliath. But I appreciate Councilman McAllister's comments. Thank you.
Chairman, if I may. You're muted, Chairman. Chairman Corley, you're muted.
My answer was yes.
All right, thank you. Sorry, I didn't want to assume.
Okay.
Yes, thank you, Council President Marola, for docketing this, and Attorney Pekka for drafting it up. This was eye-opening sitting in on this meeting, because Councilman McAllister hit the nail on the head as far as being defensive. It was a little concerning to listen to the board acknowledge a series of either practices or software that they agreed, yeah, that actually probably is contributing to this problem, but it's not our fault, over and over and over again. In fact, they simply blamed politicians for the problem at hand, which was both shocking and concerning. I was glad to hear that they're looking into fixing the processes, or at least some of them. Some of them they didn't mention fixing, though. This new software apparently classifies what used to classify things as leaks, now classifies it simply as usage, which is a little worrisome given that they said, oh, don't worry, most of these increased costs were from usage. It's like, well, were those things that are actually leaks that your software is misclassifying now? So that's definitely a concern. And just the general tenor of the meeting, unfortunately, it's stuck with me. I'm not terribly pleased. Hopefully it'll be different going forward. I know they are perturbed that they got so many complaints, but it's kind of on them. When we get a lot of complaints versus one thing or another, we don't turn around and blame the public. That's just not how it works. I don't know why it seems to be different there, but hopefully it's a lesson learned on their part and it'll be different going forward. And I know that the PUC and us will be hopefully looking into them.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the proposed resolution? Does anyone from the public want to be heard concerning this? I don't even know if there's anyone on from the public, but I have not been informed otherwise. So does someone want to
move favorable action on PCR 115-20?
Okay, it's been moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I've asked the public, and now we just need to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, 3-0. And I believe that is the last item on the intergovernmental.
That does conclude the intergovernmental committee.
Okay, we close at 7:58.
That leaves us the Public Properties, Land Use Committee and Community Affairs. Chairman Ricks, Councilman Corley, Councilman McElroy, is in order to proceed.
Okay, everyone here? All right. The time is 7:58 p.m. The Public Properties, Land Use Committee and Community Affairs comes to order. First up, we have acceptance of the minutes from November 16, 2020. Any comment from members of this committee? Any comment from members of the council? Any comment from members of the public? Seeing none, can we have a motion?
Move acceptance.
Seeing none, can we have a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, first item on the agenda, PCO 30-19. This is Councilman Snappy. Ordinance involving state law regarding unutilized commercial property. As it's not drafted, when would you prefer to have it held?
This actually should be ready by the 21st, but we'll see. I'll hold it till then, being optimistic.
Request to hold to the 21st. Do we have a motion?
I would move on behalf of the sponsor to hold it till December 21st.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And also Councilman Snappy. PCO 10-20, an ordinance relative to amendment of the Warwick Zoning Ordinance regulations for the installation of solar energy systems, not drafted. When would you prefer to be held?
First meeting of January for now. Please.
The first meeting of January, I believe, would that be Wednesday, January 6th?
Yeah.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Make a motion. Response, I would move that it be held January 6th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
There being no further business of this committee, committee meeting closes at 8 o'clock p.m.
Just to clarify, the PCO 1020 was held to January 6th. The prior item, PCO 3019, was held to when?
December 21st, I thought.
Correct.
Thank you.
Well,